All right. I am Jeff Hickerson. I'm the Executive Director for APS Healthcare for the Missouri HealthNet Chronic Care Improvement Program. I am not Brenda Moore. Brenda Moore was supposed to do the presentation today, but her daughter went into labor yesterday, so I'm in the pinch hit. I'm not nearly as exciting nor as pretty as Brenda, but you guys will just have to endure me for the next 10 to 15 minutes. Our presentation today is on evaluating the impact on treatment compliance within a community-based setting. And what we're going to present today are findings both from our telephonic and our field-based models. As far as disclosures, again, I am the executive director and Brenda Moore is the clinical director with APS Healthcare. Our relationship is with Missouri HealthNet. Missouri HealthNet is the Missouri Medicaid program. We administer the Chronic Care Improvement Program, or CCIP, as you'll hear it referred to. George Astreich is an employee of MoHealthNet. He works for the state of Missouri in the Department of Social Services, and he is our sponsor for this program. A lot of data on this slide, but in general, CCIP is a statewide disease management program. It's for the Medicaid fee-for-service members with chronic disorders. There are two portions of the state of Missouri which are excluded. One is up in the Northwest, and one is down in the Springfield, Missouri area, if you're familiar with Missouri at all. That'll be important when I talk about our comparison group here in a minute. Members qualify for the CCIP program by having one of the chronic diseases which are in the program. Those include COPD, CAD, CHF, diabetes, asthma. We recently added metabolic syndrome and obesity as well. Our IT systems were established to help us identify needed interventions. We perform risk stratification utilizing the TRS scoring system, and then also use some proprietary services to identify risk levels for the members so that we understand the interventions and the outreach. A lot of the things that we look at are members having a medical home, members' testing compliance, members' medication protocol compliance. Our outreach, once our risk stratification is done, is handled by our clinical team. We do both telephonic and in-person field team health coaching at clinics. We develop plans of care. We do interventions based on appropriate care. If we see people who are having a lot of ER utilization, who are really abusing meds, things of that sort, we get very involved there. Our field-based teams are placed in high-volume federally qualified health clinics and in the community health mental health clinics. And we have a couple of people who are helping with discharge planning in a couple of the large hospitals. I think our presentation really fits in really well with Dr. Aubert's and Dr. Dorsey's presentation. And our initial assumption when we went into this program was that if members were appropriately engaged in the program, compliance would improve and the overall cost would reduce. And it's pretty basic. That's what the states are looking for. They want better health care at a reduced cost. And that's really what we were aiming for. So in our methodology, we analyzed 12 months of claims data. We identified about 74,000 members who were continuously enrolled during that 12-month period. At any given time, we have about 160,000 members who are in the program, but we only wanted to look at the ones who had been continuously enrolled for the 12-month period. We also identified about 160,000 members, about 170,000 members who were not enrolled as the comparison group. These were members who would have qualified for the program, but they either were in one of our excluded areas, or they had opted out of the program, or they were dual eligible, because we did not cover dual eligibles in our program. The results were that members within our CCIP program, they had better compliance. And what you'll see when we go through some of the next slides is that the longer people are in the program, the better the compliance is. In our field-based teams, we saw compliance up to three times higher than the non-enrolled. And the PMPM were lower than the estimated cost of the program without our interventions. Okay. The next few slides are going to look similar in design but cover different conditions. For every one of the slides, the leftmost bar represents members who are not enrolled in the program. And the middle bar represents members who were enrolled in the program for 1 month to 12 months. And then the rightmost bar represents members who were in the program for 12 months or more. You know, COPD clinical guidelines recommend bronchodilators as a form of treatment for COPD. As you can see, substantially more of our CCIP members with COPD received treatment with bronchodilators. We had 39% for the members who were not enrolled in our program, 58% for members who were in our program for 1 to 12 months, and then 66% for members who were in our program for a year or more. No, we're pulling this directly off of claims data. We're looking at claims. And we're looking at claims in arrears, so we're looking at pharmaceutical claims for this. Okay. Compliance with beta blockers. Again, beta blockers are used after MIs, reducing blood pressure, heart rate, dilating blood vessels, and treatment with bronchodilators may prevent future heart attacks. This slide never ceases to amaze me, because we're looking at members who have a known MI, who have a known heart attack. We're looking at a Medicaid population, and of the members that are not enrolled, only 26% are receiving Medicaid or beta blockers. Now, even our 46% in the middle is not great. 64% is certainly much better, but this is a pretty telling thing, that there's just not good compliance, there's not good access to the medications, and I think it goes into the presentation you were given earlier. So, and according to the American Heart Association, most CHF patients are typically on three different classes of medication, both the ACE, ARBs, beta blockers, and diuretics. Again, the CCIP members are much more compliant with the medications. 29 to 30% for the non-enrolled members, 50 to 55% for the members that have been in for a year, and 60 to 66% for members who have been in the program for a year or more. For lipid testing for members with coronary artery disease, CAD is obviously a leading cause of death in men and women in the U.S. Lipid panels can determine the risk of CAD, and CAD is really preventable with appropriate testing and treatment and lifestyle changes. These numbers are not anywhere near what we would want them to be. Again, we're talking about a Medicaid population. There's a lot of issues with access and cost and all that. But still, when you look at the non-enrolled, only 16% are doing lipid testing. 33% that we've had in the program for a year or less, and then 39% that have been in the program for a year or more. So obviously, we have better outcomes as we go on, but these are still not great numbers. And for the hemoglobin A1Cs for diabetics, the ADA recommends at least 2 per year, more as needed. Of course, the hemoglobin A1C, it measures the blood glucose for the past 2 to 3 months. What we found is that members, and these are known diabetics, members that were not enrolled, only 16% received one test per year. 7% received 2 or more. When you go and look at the results of our interventions, we got it up to 44% for one test and 25% for 2 or more. Again, we show that there are improvements when we engage the members both telephonically and in a field-based model. Numbers still, we expect to see that these would continue to increase through the duration of the program. This slide is a little bit different. This slide is actually measuring the outcomes in our field model. These measurements were taken through both chart abstracts and through claims data, and these are the results in the clinics where we actually have a nurse on-site who's doing on-site health coaching face-to-face with members. And we were looking at mainly the diabetic measures. We were looking at 2 hemoglobin A1Cs, lipid tests, dilated retinal exams, and the annual microalbumin test. And as you can see, in every instance, when we engaged the members, the numbers went up. We had set an arbitrary goal of 70%. HEDIS-like measures, and as you can see, we immediately got huge results from having the face-to-face health coaching on all counts. Now, we haven't hit the goal on most of these, but we're getting very close, and it's much, much better than the members who are not enrolled at all. This slide shows the impact on PMPM for our program. We looked at 2 years claims history to establish the trend, and we looked at members that would have qualified for our program and what the cost was of those members to establish the trend. We ended up with a trend of 6.3%, which is under the national average of about 8%. So we do feel like this is a conservative measure for our trend. And again, there's a couple of things here. When you look at the beginning of the program, does anyone have a guess on why the number went up so high? Because the orange line represents when our program was implemented, and it looks like cost immediately went way up. Any guesses on why that would be? Exactly. We immediately started engaging people. One of the big things we did was move people to a healthcare home or a medical home. We had about 90% of our members that were in medical homes. And as soon as we start engaging them with the physicians and start getting their prescriptions filled and getting them into appropriate care, the cost immediately goes up. But then it drops off quickly. And so anyone who's looking to implement a disease management program, just beware of that, because that happens almost every time. We have been able to, basically what I would say is we've been able to maintain cost. The PMPM when the program started was about $1,000 PMPM. The PMPM right now is about $1,000 PMPM. So we have basically been able to save the inflation rate. We had anticipated the expected PMPM to be about $1,172. I think that's what that equates to, about $151 PMPM difference. These numbers have been validated, by the way, by Mercer. Okay. So in conclusion, our study shows the impact of telephonic and field-based models. One thing I will say about the field-based model is when we looked at that slide, it gives us tremendous results. However, it's a very expensive model. And so what we found is that having the combination of both a field-based and a telephonic model gives us the best results. We can cast the wide net with our telephonic outreach and then do the very specific face-to-faces with the members who are in the clinics or presenting in the hospitals. And if we can get involved with discharge review, it gives us even better results. We experienced not only improved clinical outcomes, but significantly lower healthcare costs. Compliance 150 to 200% higher for enrollees than those not enrolled. And again, the longer the program enrollment, the longer people are in the program, the improvements increase. Again, I'm not Brenda Moore, but I'd be willing to answer any questions if there's time, but otherwise feel free to contact me or Brenda or anyone if you have any additional questions. Yes, sir.
So the results that you showed regarding compensation, do we assume that all those people who had a visit?
We did. We were looking at people who were continuously enrolled and had at least one visit within the 12-month period. It is. Right. Yes, ma'am.
You said it was about $100 per month per month savings off the expenses. That completely covered your administrative costs?
That's minus admin costs. So that's taking the cost of our program out. It's about $151 PMPM difference.
Did you compare the telephone approach with the field
We looked at, we didn't. It's a different model, and it's a little more difficult to pull out just the field people and measure those differently. When we were looking at the results that were outside of the field, when we were looking at the ACE, ARBs, the hemoglobin A1Cs, those were for the entire population, including both our field and our telephonic members, and then the slide that had the field, those were just for the clinics where we have field-based people. We've not done a direct comparison. We do know that the results we get from the field-based model are much better than we get from the telephonic model. How much better, I don't know. But that's just on compliance. There's a cost associated with that, though. And your end value is much lower because you're not seeing nearly as many people and it's an expensive touch. It's an expensive engagement, but it does give very good results.
Do we know why patients opt out?
Well, there are a variety of reasons. Some just some just don't want to be in the program. I mean, but that's not the majority. Some die. They go into long-term care. There are a variety of reasons that people opt out. Some are voluntary opt-outs. Some are involuntary opt-outs. So, but the voluntary opt-outs are, I mean, very, very small, less than 100 per year. Now, we have a lot of people that end up out of the program because they move into an area of the state that's not covered by our program. They become eligible for Medicare, and so they're dual eligible. Some go on spend down. I mean, there are a variety of things that can happen. But we did just, for our results, we did just look at members who were continuously enrolled for the 12-month period. And so there was no drop of coverage, and they had an appointment with their primary care physician within the past 12 months.
And you're contracted through Missouri Medicaid?
Correct. Okay. Anything else?